And salutations, friends, and welcome back to The Arcade. We are your video game podcast here with you for a new week in a new month. I am still Mike the Legend, welcome you back to this program. So glad you can join us here for the first week in June, as the summer is now basically upon us, almost officially. A couple of weeks it's officially, but, you know, until then, it totally feels like summertime, and school's winding down, the weather's getting nice. If it's not getting nice where you are, move to somewhere nicer.
Indeed.
And we are just a few weeks ahead of E3, the big news-making event that I'm sure we'll have all the storylines coming out of in about 2 weeks' time, if my calendar calculations are correct, and we'll be all over that like stink on a hog, but that's 2 weeks away. We'll worry about that when the time comes.
Yes, and this week I'm Dennis, the man who puts the bare minimum amount of effort into his lawn.
Sorry, trigger warning to any retirees who are devoted to their lawns out there.
Yes, I've heard a couple of horror stories from people I work with who apparently have those type of neighbors to deal with, and it doesn't sound fun, you know, especially when you're a younger person that works a full-time job and has a life outside of work, when you don't want to be spending all of your entire weekend basically picking weeds because your neighbor told you to.
That seems to be a thing. Once you get to be a certain age and, you know, likely are retired and have nothing else really to fill that time with, your yard becomes your main occupation.
Yes, if you've made the mistake throughout your life of not getting a hobby. Don't be that guy that has no hobbies. Don't be that lady that has no hobbies. Don't be that person that has no hobbies. Hobbies are good. They fill your time. They give you something that you enjoy to like to do.
Mm-hmm. Your yard is just a yard.
Unless your yard's a hobby, then that's fine. Your yard can be your hobby. Just don't, you know, make someone else's yard their problem.
Good point, because there are some militant people who want you to take care of your yard as much as they take care of their own yard.
It's like, I bought a lawnmower. I'll cut my grass. I'll do that, you know, once a week, once every 2 weeks, as it looks like it needs mm-hmm. to be done. Sure. But I'm not going to go crazy with, like, Weed-X or whatever, just Lawn-X, whatever.
Kill-X.
Kill-X, whatever X variety of thing that's going out and around, you know, just to try to destroy all the weeds, because they're always going to be weeds.
Or you could go the alternative method and pick them out by hand, or with whatever tool, but
yeah, that's manual, a lot of work.
Yeah, manual digging of the weeds and removing of them.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, well, I know people who do that, and it's an entirely foolhardy endeavor.
Yes, there's always more weeds. Yeah,
you will never entirely get rid of weeds.
That is an unwinnable battle. And you know what? As soon as you mow your lawn, it looks fine.
This is true.
And, like, as long as they're all relatively green, it's fine.
And unless you are spending a lot of time walking around your yard barefoot, or have whatever other consideration you need to take into account to prevent weeds from populating in your yard, most times and for most people, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
that there's weeds in your yard.
Yeah, thankfully, my neighbors seem like they have the same or close to the same attitude as I do. Mow the lawn. That's good. I'm happy for that because
makes your life easier.
Makes my life easier. It's a lot less stress, but even if I did have a neighbor that was militant and mean and whatever, I wouldn't put up with it. I would just be like, okay, well, I'm sorry you feel that way, but I'm not doing anything more than this. I'm cutting my grass. That's a bare minimum of what I need to do.
Ooh, maybe I'll blow some extra dandelion seeds over to, yeah, to your side.
Yeah. I know you love them so much, so here's some more.
You know, you seem to not having too much to do over there, champ. Here. Shoo, go, dandelion seeds.
Yes, fly, my pretties.
but that's an official sign of being a homeowner. Once you start having to tend to your yard.
Yes.
You know, mow it and whatever. Whatever amount of maintenance on your yard and upkeep of it.
Yes. Yes, it is.
You've basically crossed that final threshold of home ownership and you're there.
Yep.
How's it feel?
It's not bad.
All right, just asking.
Yeah.
All right, well, keep us apprised of how your yard grows.
Yes, and if I have any crazy neighbors that crop up and start criticizing my lawn, to which I will send them on their merry way.
Up their nose with a rubber hose.
Absolutely.
But we are not a yard-based discussion program.
No, we are... Hell no.
Never, God, no. Never have been, likely never will be.
No, we're not some crazy show that you'll see on OLN or
HGTV.
HGTV.
Yeah, OLN I think is mostly just like...
backpacking and hiking and stuff.
Or even Storage Wars and ghost shows.
Yeah, whatever
cheap to produce program.
Yeah, we're not a cheap to produce yard-based program. We're not This Old House. We're not any of those... people that...
I'd be okay with This Old House.
Yeah, they'd probably be all right. But
that's okay. But we're not any of those other ones that are, you know, going to be adamant about lawns and be some boring plant-based discussion show of look out for this kind of weed. And if you see this, well, then here's a home remedy you can do of, like, baking soda and whatever.
Yeah.
To spread and have a more natural herbicide. No. I'm sure there are podcasts like that out there. And if you need help falling asleep, they are up your alley. We are here, and you are here because of the name, The Arcade. We are your video game podcast, and we are here to talk about video games. But one of the other topics we can't help but come back to that we play video games to keep our minds off of is the impending apocalypse, the impending machine-based destruction of humanity when computers and robots rise up to overthrow us and they become the superior species on this planet.
Yes. The robopocalypse, as we might take to calling it.
Indeed.
And one of the things that's sort of been developing over the past year or so is a little entity that Google put together called AlphaGo.
Indeed, as part of their DeepMind project, basically to make a learning computer.
Yeah.
Or learning system, algorithm.
Yeah, not unlike Skynet. it's a learning computer, but unlike Skynet, all it does so far is play Go.
Yes.
You know, the ancient Chinese game of Go.
That's more difficult to play than chess.
Yeah, because there's way more plays that you could possibly do. So it's a game of deep strategy, simple rules, but deep strategy. It's easy to pick up, hard to master.
Yes, and we first learned of AlphaGo as being a thing last year when the machine took on the European champion Lee Sedol and ended up besting him 4-1 in a 5-match series. And so, from that time, AlphaGo has kind of remained in the background, although we spoke about a month ago of the fact that AlphaGo would be taking on the premier world champion in Go, a 19-year-old player by the name of KG, in a 3-match series. And we have some results, and it turns out that we as humans don't stand a chance. We're hooped, because AlphaGo proved to be victorious in its matches against KG.
Yes, super victorious. It was a best of three, and it won the first 2 matches.
Yep. So that third one, even if KG did win, was ultimately irrelevant.
Yes.
Because it was over.
Yeah.
And with it, our hopes as a species.
Yes, that's exactly, that's a good way of putting it.
I mean...
maybe a crazy way of putting it, but I'll agree that it's a good way to put it.
Is it a far-fetched way of putting it? I wouldn't say so. We're drawing ever closer.
Yeah.
And this is just helping us on that path. Now, the interesting thing is, according to some of the creators of the AlphaGo project, they were speaking to, I believe, the Metro News source. They said that after this most recent contest against KG, the top Go player in the world, that AlphaGo will be retiring from competition, essentially. And instead, its developers and the team that work on it will be turning their attention and finding ways to, I guess, better utilize the system, the programming, the horsepower, essentially, behind AlphaGo and computational horsepower I should say, and try to use it for the betterment of humanity, similar to what IBM has tried to do with Watson over the past couple of years.
Yeah, and not just be an amusing yet scary force on Jeopardy.
Mm-hmm. But good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so we'll keep you apprised of the details and developments as they come forward, but... Yeah.
At a high level, apparently AlphaGo, yeah, was able to both mimic human patterns and search through an astounding 10 to the power of 700 possible variations of moves in the game, which is a crazy amount of moves. And, you know, human players don't have the luxury of being able to do that, so they kind of have to often play off of intuition and, you know, strategies that they may have devised, but... computer can definitely work around that from a mathematical standpoint, which a human can't.
Nope.
Like, not even coming close to doing that.
Not a hope. Not a hope at all. So, the pile of human skulls that we saw being stomped on by the T-800 in Terminator 2 exactly, is drawing ever closer. We are getting close to that frontier, and it's been a good ride, people.
Yes. It has been, but again, what we like to kind of turn to take our minds off of such things, are video games.
Yes, is certainly, and this next story certainly reminded me of a video game that I've played, you've played, we've both played, and to a certain extent, detest, but to another extent, I don't want to say admire, but it has a certain...
It's
a terrible charm.
It's embedded itself in both of our brains to the point where I'm sure both of us have introduced various people to it from the standpoint of this is the worst game you're ever going to play. We're going to play it for an hour.
It's possibly the best worst game you're going to play.
Yeah.
It's in that vein.
Yeah, the game, of course, has one annoying song that will stick in your head because it's a 10-second loop that repeats a million times.
And once you hear it, you cannot unhear it.
Yeah, it's barely a song. It's a riff at best. But the game we're talking about is Wall Street Kid.
For the Nintendo Entertainment System, yes. From a bygone era, and the point of that game is that there's actually a story element, there's a narrative to the game, in that you...
The story doesn't really ultimately matter.
The story ultimately compels you to try and play the stock market and accumulate enough wealth to meet certain thresholds and milestones in the game to buy a house, to buy yacht.
The ultimate goal is to raise money for... some castle that went on auction or something.
That's
it was
right.
Going on auction at some point, and you have to, you know, for some reason buy it to keep it in your family or something, even though you are inheriting a huge fortune, but the condition of your inheritance is that you have to buy the castle or something. Like, you have to make enough money on the stock market to prove that you're able to handle your money. It's basically you, by getting there, you have to do all like the little things like buy a motorcycle, buy a ring for your girlfriend,
buy a house,
I think a yacht was one of the items that you had to buy, working your way up ultimately to this castle. But yeah, by buying and selling stocks.
Yes, by not just buying and selling stocks, but by buying and selling, very similar though different enough stocks that you might recognize who or what they are, but they're not actually the brand names. Yes, or the company names.
They're the royalty-free versions of the brand names. So you'll see Yapple Computers, you'll see YBM Computers, you'll see Fired Man's Fund, you'll see a couple other companies like that that the names are escaping me, but those are fake stocks. That's fake money. That was a real video game, but that was fake stocks and fake money. Because it was all within the confines of a video game. But because it's a video game, you could, theoretically, play the game on a Twitch stream.
You could, and I'm sure people have.
I don't know what success or how many viewers they've had, but you could play that game.
It wouldn't
game.
Be the most compelling thing to watch.
No.
It's not the most compelling thing to play.
No. But it would be an acceptable use of Twitch to do that because it's a video game. You're streaming a video game.
And if you were adventurous enough, you could even set it up so that it could be engaged in a sort of Twitch Plays scenario similar to Twitch Plays Pokemon, Twitch Plays Street Fighter even, and yeah. Let the users in the chat of the Twitch stream basically give commands and determine how the game unfolds.
I actually think that that would be a good use of Twitch Plays to see if Twitch Plays could actually beat Wall Street Kid. Because things go sideways really quickly when they do in Wall Street Kid.
It is actually not the easiest game. It's amazingly hard.
Yeah. But that's just fake money. Again, fake money, fake game. Well, real game, fake money, fake decisions.
You can turn it off, and ultimately, if you lose money, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because it's all part of the game.
Exactly.
However, someone on Twitch did something insane and almost, like, very reminiscent of Wall Street Kid, except for real, with real money, with the real stock market, with the real brands, not the fake Apple computers, but with Apple computers, with IBM computers, with, you know, Google stock, with whatever other big stocks that they might have picked and choosed, because there was a man on Twitter who decided, or Twitch, I should say, that decided to let Twitch have at his real money and make stock pick choices for him.
And this is a thing that I believe is still unfolding. It is a stream that occurs, I believe, Monday to Friday, whenever the U.S. Stock Exchange is open. I believe it's the New York Stock Exchange. That's the main trading exchange in the United States. And essentially, yes, it is a Twitch Plays, but with this person's real money. The person behind it is apparently a software engineer, simply going by the name Mike. Not much more information offered, and the idea behind it is that they are putting up $50,000 of their own money and letting the Twitch community have at it. In that, they are determining which stocks to buy, how many to buy, how many to sell, when to sell, that kind of thing. Essentially, the Twitch community being the portfolio manager for this person's money.
Yes, and this person, Mike, just to get into a little bit of detail.
Not me, by the way.
Not Mike the Legend here. He's, I don't think either of us in this room are that brazen to leave our fate up to the internet. I've seen people on the internet. Enough said. However, this Mike, who is on Twitch doing this insane thing, is a software developer. Not unlike me, I suppose. But, he basically built a program, from what I understand. I believe it's called Robinhood. It's an app that allows Mike and the Twitch players who are involved in this social experiment to see the result of their actions in real time.
I don't think he built the app. I think he's just using the already existing app called Robinhood.
Okay, but either way, he is a software developer. Yeah. And he made some sort of setup connecting this with an Arch Linux computer with a thing, I think, as well called Stockstream. Maybe he's the developer of Stockstream.
Or that's just what it's all being called.
Yeah.
This whole experiment.
Could be.
Now, when contacted about this by some of the writers over at Polygon, Mike, last name not given,
yes,
said of this Twitch community portfolio managing idea, said, quote, "I'd seen the idea posted around on some subreddits, so just decided to build it. I just read people's buy-sell commands from the chat window, do a simple counting of each vote, take the top vote, and place that trade. That part of the system was actually easy to build. The tough part was building the interface and getting the system to a stable point where it was ready for long-term usage," end quote. So there has not been a stated duration for how long this experiment will go for. Is it a week? Is it a month? Or is it until a certain financial milestone, a goal is reached, or until everything's obliterated and he's left with no money? Supposedly, that's one possible end game is that zero is reached, $0 in the account is reached. Now, that can't exactly be reached overnight. There are some breaks, some safety measures in place to prevent the Twitch community from just going, let's say, off the rails.
Just buck wild with his money, as it were.
According to some regulations laid down by the U.S. Financial Industry Regulating Authority, there's really no more than $25,000 that can be lost in a day for this, in whatever.
Which is still half of the money he put up, and also a huge amount of money.
Yes. The way it's set up is that he also has set up the stream so that it must stay above $25,000. And there are other regulations imposed, on day traders to try and prevent, you know, people from losing their shirts, but they still can. It's theoretically possible, though for the experiment here, there are some breaks and stopgaps installed, which is a wise idea, but even still, potentially allowing Twitch to just lose $25,000 for you?
Just during crazy day trading sessions?
Sure, why not? I know this is not something I would do. I know this is something you wouldn't do. It takes a special kind of person to actually follow through with this idea.
See, I would do something like this with a far smaller amount of money. But I would also want it to be based on more than one control piece. I would want something else to help make the decisions rather than just a Twitch stream blindly saying buy this stock, sell this stock. I would basically want to have maybe some computer algorithm looking through, I don't know, Twitter feeds, cross-referencing them with whatever they can for maybe, you know, historical reference of like whenever people mention this, this type of thing gets, you know, raises in value. People mention this, this type of thing loses in value, and then basically limit the options of what a Twitch stream could possibly vote on. Be like, here's the five things for this hour. Vote on them, and then, you know, the highest vote wins kind of thing. Like, okay, here's the next hour. But I might put on the outside of things, maybe $100 into something like this.
Mm-hmm.
$50,000 is unspeakable to me.
And my thought was that if he's putting allegedly this is his own money, that's the idea being purported with the stream, without a last name and really any identity of the person behind this, it makes it that much more difficult to do anything to verify that this is in fact somebody's own money.
Or that there's actually money involved.
Or that there's actually money involved, that's true. But if this is, in fact, $50,000 of their own money, then my thought was, how much money do they actually have to just have $50,000 that they can play around with almost essentially fun money for the Twitch stream idea, like such as this?
Yeah. it's a disgusting thought.
You know, $50,000 that you can just, that you're okay with potentially losing, or potentially losing $25,000, excuse me, but even still, you're okay with that. So what sort of cushion do you have? What sort of nest egg are you sitting on where $50,000 is just change that you can play with?
That's Zuckerberg money, I think. That's Gates money, perhaps.
Alternatively, are they that hard up and this is kind of their last gasp?
Yeah, they saved and scrimped for years, and this is their big thing. I'm going to put my life in the internet. Like, okay, holy crap, you're insane.
The ultimate outcome, having enough money to buy a house in Silicon Valley.
Man.
But I believe after the first day, the portfolio, the $50,000 had actually gained about between $30 and $50. When contacted and speaking to Polygon again, this Mike individual, not me, by the way, said, quote, "Before today, I was a bit skeptical, thought I might lose money quickly, but things seem okay. Now that a lot of the money is diversified, the swings in value should start getting bigger. I ran some simulations with some made-up data and calculated that it would last at least a couple months. But now that there are so many people using it, I'm getting lots of Robinhood referrals, so the account could start getting bigger and bigger. And as for how long it can go and whatever else, his final thought to Polygon was, quote, "I'm actually pretty optimistic about how hard it'll be. The entire system I've built is 100% automated, including the starting and stopping of the stream, so theoretically, I could just leave it running and not pay attention. So again, just turning a blind eye to $50,000.
Or
it's doing its thing. I don't know. That's okay.
And what's the ultimate end game here? What if it grows to like $1 million or something? Is he just going to go, thanks, shut it off forever and go, just go dark?
I suppose.
Well, the internet just made this guy $1 million. And got nothing in return. Because this is the kind of thing that people might start getting invested in and passionate about.
There might be fervently so.
There might be a whole community based around this sort of thing.
And also, too, if you were one of the, say, regular followers of this stream and of this idea, and you are there engaged in the voting, doing whatever research to make an educated vote of what you believe should happen and whatnot, do you feel that you, or would you feel that you have some claim to the profit that's been made?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because you are part of the decision making that has guided, potentially, some of this money towards profit, potentially major profit, we don't know. Would you seek, compensation for your time and effort with this guy's money? Or is that an understanding that you as the Twitch stream viewer have nothing more than, and are entitled to nothing more than just a vote on, the occasional vote on what should happen?
I mean, my gut says that that is all you're entitled to, the occasional vote. I mean, ultimately, Twitch streams are just entertaining.
They are.
They're just meant to be entertainment. And if you are that involved, huh. However, it would be a nice sign of good faith if he makes like $1 million or something insane and just kind of, if he is running a, you know, this is software, perhaps, it, you know, he is at the point where, or it's entirely possible that he will be keeping track of who votes for what, and he might be able to keep some sort of metrics of like who voted for what, who made the most successful kind of votes, and like maybe has like a top 10 list or something that he might split a certain amount of money with. That'd be a nice sign of good faith. Like, hey, thanks for all your positive help here. Here's you know, a little bit of cash as a reward for your, you know, good work. That'd be kind of nice.
If not that, then in my mind, I'm thinking some kind of charitable donation to an agency in the name of, or voted on by the Twitch stream community.
Yeah.
You know, what should I give some of this profit to? Alternatively, then, this Mike person who clearly has some money to play with, a decent amount of money, if they have 50,000 to play with in the stock market, they'd be getting quite a little tax break for that too.
Yes.
As making a charitable donation.
Yes. Probably a huge charitable donation.
So there's that too. But if you are interested in following along with the stream, it begins every morning at 9 a.m. Monday to Friday. We link to it on our website, thearcadeshow.com. And let us know, too, if this is a thing you would ever have the gumption to do, the chutzpah, the huevos rancheros to do, if you had just an extra $50,000 to kick around and weren't quite sure what to do with it. Like, you're settled, you got your house, you got your car, all your major expenses are okay, and just, you know, I want to have some fun with this. Would you do this? Let us know. You can message us and follow us on Twitter at The Arcade Show and send us a message on Facebook and like our page as well, facebook.com/The Arcade Show. Now then, as I said, we are The Arcade. We are your video game podcast. We shall turn our attention more focused to the video game side of the world. And some news coming out of late last week, I believe late Thursday and Friday, after our show had already been recorded and was ready for posting, if not had been posted by the time details broke, on Far Cry 5 actually being revealed in a video posted by Ubisoft last Friday, They had teased it throughout last week, but of course they didn't reveal all the details until we had already posted the show because they're jerks. And they did not even send us an advanced copy of the video. So we had no details to work off and just had to wait until they posted it on YouTube.
Yes.
Ah, monsters.
Thanks, Ubisoft.
Yeah, thanks for nothing. You jerks.
Ubisoft jerks.
UB jerks.
Yeah, oh, nice.
Thank you.
But, yeah, Far Cry 5 indeed. There are details about it. There's some pretty juicy details about it, actually.
Indeed.
The first and biggest thing to know about Far Cry 5 is that it's the first Far Cry game set in America.
Ooh.
The new world. Ooh.
Previous ones have been set in jungles, Caribbean islands, or even in mountain ranges. I believe the Himalayas.
I think the Himalayas sounds right.
Were Far Cry 4.
Yep. But this is set in the fictional town of Hope County, Montana, where, again, like other Far Cry games, you can make your own character. But in this game, the setup is that you are a junior deputy who have to take down a religious cult called Eden's Gate. So very much in reference to a couple other religious cults of times gone by, most notably Heaven's Gate.
Yes, the suicide cult from the late 90s.
Yes. Yeah, you are on your journey supported by Pastor Jerome, who's an African-American priest who lost most of his congregation to this cult. There's a bartender named Mary May who makes, as is mentioned, flammable cocktails. And Nick Rye, who is your pilot buddy who wants to create a better future for his kid.
Indeed.
Who I'm sure has some sort of tragedy coming his way with a story like that.
Or has already suffered a tragedy with one child and doesn't want to lose another, that kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, and I understand there's a petition circulating around the internet to try and... It's one of those things where you don't know if it's somebody being serious or they're trolling, but the idea of the petition is to gather signatures and convince Ubisoft to change the crazy backwoods religious enemies in the game to being, I believe, Muslims, or change the location of the game to Canada, because that just hits a bit too close to home for some people, it being, white backwoods yokels in a creepy religious cult in America.
Yeah.
Here's the funny thing. That shit's actually real and happening.
Yep, it sure is.
All across rural United States. And at least they kind of softened it and added a, the layer of fiction of the creepy religious cult in there, so it's not just unsettling anti-government militiamen.
Yeah, but, again, this stuff is legit, and the petition sort of just kind of, unfortunately, sheds, some negative light on people in general, unfortunately. But how a lot of them are racist. A lot of them are just kind of unwilling to accept, look in the mirror, really, at what kind of crap society that they're a part of.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of a crap society they're striving to build and want to have.
Yeah. Not to get too preachy here or anything, but
We've kind of got the, 10,000, feet, view, being removed from it at all and not living in it. I mean,
yeah, we get to look at it from the outside, literally from, crazy reports and stuff that we see around, and yeah. Your petitions don't make your cause look any better, especially when your first knee-jerk reaction is, make it Muslims. It's like, why? Muslims don't do this kind of crap in America.
Again, not sure if somebody's serious or just trolling. But either is an entirely plausible scenario. And the funny thing is, with it being set in rural Montana, the fictional location of Hope County, it could be any state in the Union.
Yeah.
Like, it could be rural Georgia, rural North Dakota, Idaho, Iowa. You can set these creepy backwoods yokels in any state, and it makes sense.
Yeah. Rural California.
Rural Florida.
Yeah.
Texas.
Upstate New York somewhere.
Yeah.
Like somewhere, like not not the expensive parts of upstate New York. But like somewhere along the countryside. Like it all makes sense. Mm-hmm. You can put it anywhere.
By the Catskills. Yeah. Or even somewhere in, you know, the Appalachians in Virginia, anywhere along there.
But if you are not one of those crazy people trying to either get the game shut down or changed significantly, there is stuff to get excited about if you are, again, get not put off by the satire that is present in the game. And there, some of the things that there are to be excited about is that it will be playable on both PS4 Pro and Project Scorpio.
Ooh.
So, surely also going to be on the regular versions of both systems as well, but if they say that specifically, there's probably a significant jump in graphics quality, so keep your eyes peeled for that.
Yes. So you can see the conviction in the eyes of the creepy cult people.
Yes, or how dead their eyes are.
Ooh.
But you can also play the entire story solo or in two-player co-op, which I love that feature. It's really awesome whenever you can do that type of thing in a video game. It just kind of makes the game a lot more, you know, fun.
True. Very true. Especially if it's got, say, drop-in, drop-out co-op, where you can just do it on the fly. That's awesome. Vehicles are a big part of this game. As we said, with one of the characters being a pilot, he'll be able to fly what appears to be a crop duster. It would make sense if he's got a crop dusting plane. Fly it all around. You can. There's even aerial dogfights, apparently.
Yes, because this cult is really well equipped.
What? Yeah.
It is a crazy cult in America.
Crazy backwards cult in America.
Yes.
So, and speaking of that, weapons will include guns, obviously grenades, obviously, along with sledgehammers, and of course, baseball bats.
The American pastime. But, yeah, you can also recruit people, recruit animals as well.
So if you're recruiting people to fight for you, does that not also make you some element of cult leader as well?
No, you're just a charismatic guy who is able to draw people with your charisma. And, yeah, okay, it's a cult leader.
To fight against the cult leader? Irony, Far Cry 5, Be Thy Name?
Yes. But other kind of old-school features that are included, map editor. That's always kind of an interesting thing to include in a FPS-type game.
I wonder what they could include with the setting being rural Montana.
The sky might be the limit.
Literally.
Yes. Hopefully a dental floss farm. Little reference for the Zappa fans out there.
Oh, thank you. That was good.
But yes, if you are getting it on PS4, you will get a free Far Cry 5 skin pack at launch.
And this bullet point from the press release put out by Ubisoft about this game, Far Cry 5, kind of tickles me pink. As we have mentioned, it's set in the fictional location of Hope County, Montana, with a bunch of creepy backwoods yokels and a cult, and there's an element of militia to it that is a satirical take, we hope, on America, but it's a little close to reality. And this game, Far Cry 5, is being developed and headed by Ubisoft Montreal, with support apparently from Ubisoft Toronto, Ubisoft Kiev, Ubisoft Shanghai, and Ubisoft Reflections. So a lot of international flavor for a game set in America.
Yes.
What does that say about the world view of America? Just going to throw that out there.
Yeah. Yeah, America, that's just a little bit of a question.
Most of the major studios not located in America to be working on this game.
Yes, and if this is the picture that they paint of America in the world at large, maybe there's something to be done about that, maybe not. Again, we don't want to get too political, but
overthrow the militias.
Yes.
With a militia.
Indeed.
With the announcement, there is also a release date, Far Cry 5, coming out on February 27th, though it would also not surprise me if the game gets delayed and pushed back to perhaps a summer or early fall release, you know, to allow for more spit and polish, to really perfect the deadness of those cult people eyes.
Yes. I mean, it is an important thing to nail down.
You know, you don't want them looking too lifelike.
Like, you need a bit of the creepy Beyond the Valley of the Dolls thing, because that's just sort of what a lot of those people are like in real life.
Yeah, it's true. They drink the Kool-Aid. They drink it hard.
They sure do.
Some,
but maybe we shouldn't use that term necessarily when talking about a cult, because...
Oh, Jonestown was long ago. So they're not making a game based on Jonestown. Mostly.
No, hopefully not.
Well,
maybe.
I mean, hey, it's set in Montana, not the Caribbean. So it's totally different.
It's totally different.
Totally different.
It's also not like Heaven's Gate. Wait.
Hey, that was okay. There's no mention of Comet at all, and doesn't say the cult people are wearing Nikes.
Oh my god,
yes. I remember being home from school that day the Heaven's Gate cult thing happened.
I watched the whole thing on TV. I still remember what the leader guy looked like.
Oh, the old white guy.
The old white guy with the white hair and like the shaved head kind of thing? Like,
yes.
Oh man, what a creep.
And his eyes were just clearly like, he's gone.
Yeah, he's out there somewhere.
Yeah, I remember having the TV just glued to CNN. I was just enthralled. I couldn't turn it off because this is so weird and bizarre. What the hell is going on?
This is actually happening in real time right now.
And I remember because I was so glued to the TV, my parents kind of started to become concerned that I was being enthralled for the wrong reasons. But it was more just like, this is so, like, bizarre.
It's like, how could people possibly be into this sort of thing?
And it was so, and of course that was the early days of the internet and they had their very early Heaven's Gate website and everything. And you're like,
yes,
this is so wild.
Oh man.
So yeah. And also too, up to that point, I don't think there'd really been a mass cult suicide, in our time to that point.
No.
I mean, Jonestown obviously is the biggest one.
Yeah, but that was like
70s,
long time, way before I was born.
Yeah. And then there were probably some smaller ones, but then there was the dramatic effect of the Heaven's Gate one
with yes.
like all the purple shrouds and the Nikes. Like, this is just creepy, really yep. creepy. And, the brother of Nichelle Nichols actually was one of them. I remember that.
Yes, that does bring a vague memory for me as well. Her being one of the commentators, I guess being a famous media personality already at that point.
A known name.
Known name. Also sort of like making a known name, making an impassioned plea definitely helps people care about something a little bit more as well. So
it does. And yeah, so, hopefully that is not something anyone has to experience again anytime soon, other than perhaps in video game form.
Yeah. And I mean, there were other ones as well. Branch Davidians,
that had a flair for the dramatics too.
Yeah. Well, they all typically do. But yeah. The Branch Davidians with their leader, David Koresh. If you look up a picture of him on the internet, same type of hallmarks, you know, the crazy hair, you know, the unshaved kind of face. Though with David Koresh, it only looks like, you know, a few days unshaven, as opposed to like, you know, a guy that's grown like a full-on biblical beard or something. Mm. But, you know, he still has like the messianic tendencies.
Fine way of putting it.
Yeah.
But once the game Far Cry 5 is released, no doubt people will be streaming it and perhaps gain a cult following a further gameplay.
Ooh.
Thank you. And while the first thought for people to stream their games online would be through Twitch, Microsoft wants to change that and they want to hone in on that, the monopoly that Twitch has really with the game streaming space. We spoke a year or two ago about their acquisition of an upstart service called Beam. They have since gone through, and late last week they have relaunched it. It is now under a new name. It is now being called Mixer.
Yeah. Now, Beam, I've never used it myself, but I've seen it, you know, one of my coworkers uses it. He has friends on there, and they'll kind of use it with each other. They use Beam with each other, I should say. And it looked really solid, really quick, really snappy, responsive. I want to say a little bit better than Twitch.
It seemed that the low latency aspect seems to be something that Beam service was really striving for.
Yeah.
And with the relaunch, there's a couple of added features that Microsoft has put into it as well, most notably co-streaming. So while Twitch is basically one stream, one video stream per page on now Mixer, one page can have up to four simultaneous streams. So the example given in the video, we link to on our website, thearcadeshow.com, is actually I believe a Halo deathmatch between four players.
Yeah, so you get to see the entire deathmatch. You don't have to just watch one player stream. You can kind of, you know, glance over at all the different parts as you see fit, which is kind of a really cool feature. I can see other potential uses for this as well. Perhaps speedrunners who want to have a race.
Ooh, I like that idea.
I mean, as someone that tried to set something like that up before, it's a nightmare. It's a huge nightmare normally to try to stream four things at once onto one stream. It sucks. Tons of latency.
Oh, yeah.
Just, you need crazy equipment if you're doing it the right way normally, but it's really hard to do, and...
And with the ability to simultaneously stream things, or co-stream as they're calling it, you eliminate the need, say, for like any sort of broadcast equipment or whatever to switch between your sources. You can just have them all up all the time.
Yeah.
On the individual and respective streams, which is awesome, and in some ways kind of reduces the barrier of entry for game streaming even further, making it just that much simpler for people to get into, and also kind of making me wish we had this back in the day for all the GoldenEye and Perfect Dark death matches.
Oh, yeah. Or just the internet in general.
Well,
so we could each have our own full-size TV, and if anyone just kind of wants to be a spectator, they could just have that.
Yes. This would have been an awesome feature for this.
But also, in a way, this does harken back to those days as well. Because...
True.
Yeah, that's, we had to play the games like that back in the day. We had to actually all sit around one TV and watch the four screen split version and
watch it lag like hell when somebody lets off a landmine or a neutron bomb in Perfect Dark.
Yeah, and you, I mean, it's kind of hard to tell everything that's happening because the real estate is not there for the screen for you, and you can only do your best, but, yeah, so this is sort of a little bit harkening back to that, even though I know it's not really, but yeah.
And another feature that has been added into the Mixer service, or platform, if you will, is an app for mobile devices available on both iOS and Android, currently in beta form, but it's called Mixer Create, and with it... right now, people can only self-broadcast, but eventually, this Mixer Create app for mobile devices will allow users to stream gameplay as well. So the example that was given by Microsoft in the press release is, quote, "In the future, you could imagine streaming Pokemon Go on your mobile device through Mixer and hunting with viewers." So, an interesting idea. I don't know if that's available on the Twitch service. Mobile streaming.
I don't think it is. I mean, it goes you can do the opposite on the Twitch service. You can watch streams on your phone.
But you can't upload streams to it via mobile devices.
Yeah, I don't think so. Though part of me is always a little bit paranoid about how much people get to see, because, you know, a phone, there's typically a lot more personal information and stuff that might be there, and if I'm getting a phone call or something, I don't want to stream that to the world. Like,
I can picture a lot of people perhaps just forgetting they have the stream going and taking a phone call or whatnot, or going to the bathroom or what have you. Yeah,
exactly.
Having a conversation with someone they don't want anyone else to be involved in the stream and whatnot. And
yeah.
So that can be a bit awkward, but right now the Mixer app is available on iOS and Android, and the service is available on PS, or is and will be available on PC and Xbox One, because Microsoft owns it.
Yeah.
It's not coming to PS4.
No, unfortunately not, but...
It'd be kind of crazy if it did, but I don't envision that happening at all.
Though part of me thinks it might at some point. Microsoft does do surprising things from time to time.
This is true. I won't say it's impossible. I mean, Minecraft is multi-platform, but then again, it was multi-platform to start with.
Yeah, so they kind of fell into that. But speaking of streaming, the other big company that we have already mentioned a couple times is Twitch. They're sort of the juggernaut at this point, but...
Hard to unseat,
hard to take down. And they keep doing things to try to keep themselves up there at the top. And one of those things that Twitch often does is... form strange and interesting partnerships with people and properties and people who own properties and various things.
Well, entertainment nature. Properties, not yes. physical properties.
Yes, not properties, not
this houses. Isn't Monopoly.
Yes, not yet.
They didn't buy Boardwalk.
Not yet.
They're not live streaming Baltic Avenue or anything.
No, but in the past, to try to boost their popularity and stuff, they've partnered with various esports leagues to be the official Twitching or streaming partner
service.
They've
and that's also, to say nothing of the PBS partnerships.
Yeah. I was just going to get to that. They've done things with PBS, for example, they had a whole marathon of The Joy of Painting.
Yes.
Where they went through all however many seasons of the show. There's something 40, some insane amount of seasons of that show.
And I believe they're still currently engaged in a marathon of every episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. And there was maybe...
Oh, the Julia Child.
Yeah, the Joy of Cooking as well.
Yes.
Or it might have been The French Chef. I don't recall. I think it might have been The Joy of Cooking.
It was her first series.
Yeah. But yeah, a lot of different interesting things that they try to bring to the table.
I guess perhaps realizing that the service itself, the idea behind it, live streaming of gameplay or whatever, can be duplicated and perhaps improved on in whatever other areas, but content will really be the key to it.
Yeah, just like anything. I mean, Netflix did the same thing for TV show streaming as well. They could have just been a big repository for pre-existing movies and television shows, but what they chose to do was start to create their own content, and a lot of their own content is damn good.
It's true, and content is what will keep people there, ultimately, yeah. Because, you know, other copycat services will come along, such as perhaps Mixer, as we just mentioned, but if there's already existing content that people like, that people enjoy, they will stay with that existing service.
Yeah.
And so, a new partnership that Twitch has struck to try and keep people's eyeballs on their service and using their service is to partner up with Bandai Namco for the launch of something called the Tekken World Tour. And what it is, it's a professional esports league with a prize pool of $200,000 sitting at the end of a 6-month long season. And between this partnership, Twitch will be the exclusive broadcasting rights holder for the Tekken World Tour events, which start off in just a couple of weeks, actually, though a specific date has not yet been announced. Sometime this summer is ultimately when the Tekken World League will start, or World Tour will start.
Yeah. Now, again, just to reiterate, again, this is definitely not the first Twitch-backed esports initiative.
Oh, certainly not.
But it's one of the first Tekken 7 initiatives.
It's true.
Maybe the first Tekken 7 initiative?
Probably. I think the game is still yet to be released. So for this to be struck up, Tekken 7 will be a popular game upon its release.
Yep.
As Tekken games usually are. And to get in there and have this be the exclusive platform on which Tekken, or this specific Tekken 7 series will be streamed on, I think is a very easy and understandable deal to make if you're Twitch.
Yeah. Also an easy and understandable deal to make if you are Tekken.
Bandai Namco, yes. Certainly I see that. And ultimately the fighting game community loves tournaments. They love games like this, and they love watching it. And Twitch is feeding into that and capitalizing on that. So makes sense. We'll have more details on it once they become available, but a good idea, and we'll see, no doubt, more partnerships like this struck up in the future. But kind of a surprising one was announced in terms of partnerships, was announced by Sony just a couple of days ago when they announced a deal, well, several deals if you want to look at it like that, but with themselves and many movie theater chains across not just the United States, but Canada as well.
Yes.
And the reason these partnerships were struck is because Sony, with these partnerships, will now be showing their E3 press conference, what they're calling their experience, whatever, not just to the audience in the auditorium in Los Angeles on Monday, June 12th in the evening, not just to those watching it online, but also to those who are watching it in the comfort of a movie theater. Because with this deal, yes, movie theaters will be showing that stream, that event for Sony in their cinema.
Yes, which harkens back to the early days of pay-per-view, if you recall. Maybe you don't, because it was a long time ago, and it actually, a lot of it was before our time as well, but I definitely do remember some pay-per-view events still would be held in movie theaters, like big boxing matches on occasion, or big wrestling matches, like WrestleManias would often be shown in movie theaters.
Yes.
But the big kicker for this one is that the tickets are free.
They are. Now, that being said, these are kind of working like, say, the premiere screening for a movie in your town or whatever, where the newspaper, the TV stations, the radio, everyone's giving away passes to the advanced screening of whatever movie, except they're giving away more passes than there are seats in the theater.
Yes.
So it's first come, first serve.
Yes.
And it's going to be crowded as hell, potentially, like all advanced screenings are.
Yeah.
I've heard advanced screenings are just kind of not worth it.
Yeah, I prefer limited engagement screenings where you get invited and you get your company name written on the tickets and you get to go, I'm a bigwig. Oh, yeah.
All right, Mr. Braggy Pants.
Absolutely. Anytime, Cinematheque.
But not only will you be able to see the Sony press conference, but if you are able to get a ticket and get in and get a seat and watch it, you'll also be able to get a quote-unquote exclusive poster, as well as the number 76 card from the PlayStation collectible card series. Sony is saying that the poster and card will not be offered anywhere else outside of this one Monday night, June 12th. As well, all attendees will get a, quote, digital gift basket chock full of goodies from the PlayStation Store. You know what's better? A physical gift basket.
I wouldn't say that.
Why not?
Because a lot of stuff in the PlayStation Store could be worth a lot of money. And I don't care as much about physical stuff anymore. The PlayStation Store has got a lot of my money, so, yeah.
Fair enough.
I might be interested in this now that I hear about that, to be perfectly honest.
Tickets are currently available, and they can be claimed through the PlayStation E3 Experience website. We link to that on our website, thearcadeshow.com. As well, the event is going to be shown throughout Latin America. Those ticketing details will be announced at a later date. And for those who are listening to us in our local market of Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, yes, the event is being shown here at the Polo Park Cinema. Yes. It has been renamed under a very corporate partnership name that is stupid, and no one will call it that. We don't get money for calling it by its official corporate sponsorship name.
Yeah.
It's at Polo Park.
Yes, it's the Polo Park Theater, the big blue building.
Yes, you cannot miss it. It is going to be shown. The PlayStation stream will and event will be seen Monday, June 12th at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central Time. Winnipeg people, Dennis, that's you.
Indeed.
So get on that. And remember, there's more tickets than seats. So first come, first serve. So get to the theater early once you have your tickets. Just be aware.
Yes.
But a game that potentially may be shown off during the Sony event, though I'll grant unlikely, but will likely be playable to attendees of the E3 experience, as it's open to the public now and will be on the show floor, is Sonic Mania, the game that is taking Sonic back basically to his roots.
Yes. A new 2D Sonic adventure looks just like the old Genesis games.
Yeah.
I'm sure handles just the same as well, given what I've seen in preview videos. But, the trailer is bookended with a couple of, you know, those old school Sonic type animations that are reminiscent of the old Sonic cartoons, that were around in the 90s and into the, I think into the early 2000s.
Yes, with Sonic Underground.
Yeah. Though that one wasn't as good as the other.
Yeah, that was a little weird. He found his siblings and they formed a rock band. And
yeah. Not as good as the classic one, you know, where he's taking down Dr. Robotnik and all the animals are at risk of becoming robots and stuff. But,
all the while eating chili dogs.
Yes, all the while eating chili dogs because that's the thing that Sonic the Hedgehog loved. Not sure if Jaleel White is still going to be the voice of Sonic the Hedgehog. They didn't have any sort of voices, but, you know, but the game itself, the gameplay itself does, as I said, look just like the classic Genesis titles.
It fits in with the current trend of retro style games. However, this isn't necessarily a retro style game because there were Sonic games like this.
Yeah.
It's just in keeping with that tradition that it established. And quite frankly, what people want in a Sonic game, or many people want in a Sonic games, and what Sonic games deviated from once technology improved. Understandably, Sega took the game in different directions. Sonic Adventure, Adventure 2, kart racing games for some asinine reason, Shadow the Hedgehog, and epic fantasy games and whatever. But ultimately, people have still always enjoyed and had a soft spot for the 2D side-scrolling games from the Sega Genesis days.
Yeah, the games that felt really fast and, you know, the type of gameplay that encourages you to go fast, to play it fast, because it just feels good when you play it that fast, and with different camera tricks to make it seem like it's going faster than the system that can handle with blast processing and whatnot.
Always the blast processing. But Sonic Mania in the latest trailer, again, looks very, it's not even like an HD, you know, upgrade of the 16-bit style graphics. It seems to be more purely going for 16-bit style graphics.
Yeah, even though there are some flourishes that get added here and there that clearly make use of the far superior hardware of today's devices, you know, some glass-shattering type effects, some dissolving sand-looking stuff that looks way better than anything could have possibly done in the 16-bit era.
Mm-hmm.
But it still looks like it could fit in the 16-bit era if you just kind of dumb those flourishes down a bit. And that's good.
And the kicker at the tail end of the new trailer that we just watched before talking about it is that the game has a release date of August 15th. So it comes out on the PlayStation 4, Xbox One, I believe PC as well, and also the Switch.
Yes. A nice new title for the Switch.
It is indeed, and so good that it's coming very soon. And I hope it does well. I hope it's what it's claiming to be, because from the trailers, it looks like something I kind of really want to play and see how it stacks up to the old ones, to my memories of being a Sega kid and having the Sonic games.
Yes. And, you know, as a Nintendo kid, I was often jealous of the Sega kids for having Sonic, because it was one of those franchises that was just kind of universal. I'm sure in the same way that Mario was one of those franchises that was universal,
mm-hmm.
that even if you're a Sega kid, you wanted to play Mario games.
Or Donkey Kong Country.
Or Donkey Kong Country. Just like if you were a Nintendo kid, you wanted to play Sonic games. Or Vector Man, I suppose.
Or Vector Man. Mostly the Sonic games.
Yeah, mostly the Sonic
games. The sports games, though.
Yeah, which were on both systems.
They were, but I don't know. I always preferred them on the Sega system.
I preferred them on Super Nintendo.
Well, let us fight.
Still there.
Pistols at dawn.
Yes. I shall challenge you to a duel. But, yeah.
So
Mania was delayed once, so let's really hope that no whammies happen in the next few weeks, because that would really suck.
That would suck. It's 2 months away. I think they should be able to make it.
Yeah, hopefully they're in the clear, but, you know, knocking on wood.
Is that really wood?
Yeah.
Ish?
Yeah, it's wood-ish.
All right, well, good enough. There's enough wood content to qualify for the knocking of it.
And it's got enough fake wood grain-looking stuff on the top of it to make it look like it's real wood, so good.
So long as it's got that. That's really the important part.
Yes. But speaking of new games, one more piece of information about a thing we should probably get to before
yes.
rolling on to the next section of the show.
Before finishing off for the night?
Yes, new game was released on mobile devices by the Pokemon Company. No, it's not Pokemon Go 2 Electric Boogaloo.
The Revenge?
Yeah, Go 2 Hell. No, it's Pokemon.
It's all the fire Pokemon.
Yes, it's
nothing related to Pokemon Go.
Yeah, nothing related to Pokemon Go. It's actually kind of an out of left field, hilarious title. One that makes no sense. It's called Magikarp Jump. It's out on iOS and Android. I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but I will get my hands on it and play it. It looks pretty silly.
And the name is actually a fairly accurate description of what the game is, the aim of the game and the gameplay as well, is that you as the a Pokemon trainer, you have a Magikarp, and the idea is to train up and strengthen and make your Magikarp able to jump higher than other people's Magikarps. Now you can train it, you can do strength training, stamina training, you can feed it, so there's different Magikarp patterns which can be discovered. You then challenge other trainers at different levels to have your Magikarp jump higher. There's also external environmental hazards, such as your Magikarp potentially being scooped up and flown away with by a Pidgey or a Pidgeot.
Or Pidgeotto.
No, yes, or Pidgeotto.
Yes.
Zyra. Amen. But there's also tournaments available and various achievements you can unlock in the game.
And the coolest part, when you do well in jumping tournaments, you get commemorative photos of your achievement. Direct quote from the game's description. And then you can share these photos with friends to show the world how well you've trained your Magikarp. Again, end quote. All from the game's description. Thanks, game's description.
Thanks, PR person who had to write that.
You're probably drinking right now.
You earned your pay that day. And the scotch at the end of it.
Yes. During it.
At the start of it.
Yes.
As well, the Magikarp, you don't necessarily carry one Magikarp all through the game, because if you do well enough and you level up your Magikarp high enough, you can actually retire your Magikarp once it reaches level 20. Potentially then retires the undisputed champion of jumping? I don't know.
Well, I haven't played it
yet. It sustains an injury and is forced to retire from competitive jumping?
Yes, perhaps some sort of concussion-related thing. I don't know. I don't know Magikarp physiology.
Tore a tendon. It's done. It's jumping career over. Or, like a horse, broke its leg and has to be put down.
Yes.
We don't know. But Magikarp Jump. It's a thing that is out now for Android and iOS. Get your hands on it now if you are tired of Pokemon Go, and you're not playing that anymore, but you still want a Pokemon experience on your phone.
Indeed. But we could keep ranting on and on about various things, but we don't have any more prepared.
I mean, we could just awkwardly fill the time, but no, we're better than that, and we deserve to give, and you deserve to hear better than that, and we deserve to give you better than that.
Yes, which is why we're going to leave you with something, the last part that we have prepared for you.
Indeed. If you've listened to this program at all, you shall know it by the name of The Blast from the Past, the segment of the show where we talk about items of yore that are celebrating a milestone anniversary on at some point within the week span of this program. And we have two items in The Blast from the Past of this week. One of them is a movie, which is the younger item, and yet the other is an album, a musical album, that is the significantly older of the two items that is celebrating a remarkable milestone anniversary.
Yes.
And I feel that is where we should start.
Yeah, I think it's probably fair to say. I think there's less for us to say about this, because what has there been said? What hasn't been said about this album that needs to be said? This album was released 50 years ago by one of the legendary bands of modern music, really.
Certainly.
And arguably this album sort of changed modern music. I mean, people can argue that there would have been something else if this album didn't do it, but that's a dumb argument, because this album did do it. This album was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band by the Beatles,
which officially turned 50 years old on June 1st. 50 years old. That's a hell of a long time.
Yes.
And it's the interesting thing is it still stands.
Yeah. I mean, it would fit perfectly in. I think if it was released now, it would fit perfectly in with, you know, some of the weirder indie music that's out there. Maybe it wouldn't be as popular now, but
that could also just be a result of the fragmentation of the musical industry as well.
Yeah. But when it did, because it did come out 50 years ago and it was like this crazy weird album released by one of the biggest bands in the world, people kind of stood up and took notice of, oh, huh, you can do that with music?
And not only that, it represented such a drastic departure for the band, too, for the Beatles.
Yeah.
From their, I guess, the first half of their career is them being the young boy to young man, you know, mop-topped Fab Four, just the young lads from, I believe, Liverpool. And,
yes.
Just playing their very old-style rock and roll songs.
Yeah, very much skiffle still, influenced maybe by Chuck Berry and whatnot, Elvis kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it started a little bit with Revolver, but really kicked in quite crazy with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band when they would just sort of, well, I'm sure drugs were a factor.
Oh, partly. Oh, let's be clear. There was LSD going on. There was marijuana.
Yeah.
I'm sure other hallucinogens.
Yeah. Not to say that those necessarily are solely responsible for the music.
No.
But, you know, when creative people put their minds to it, they're going to be creative anyways. But I'm sure when creative people get all messed up, their creative ideas get kind of put askew, and then when they come back to being sober, they take those askew ideas and go, huh, I'm going to polish that up a little bit. And here we go. Now you get to listen to Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, a vaguely thematic album that sort of all ties together, but also sort of doesn't, but is also kind of insane. Just, if you've never heard it, you should do yourself a service and listen to it at least once. You'll probably find something you like on it.
I think it'd be hard not to. I mean, there's kind of a great diversity even within the tracks of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. You have something kind of as weird and off-kilter as For the Benefit of Mr. Kite.
Yes.
Or Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite.
Yes. And also going into like more traditional type areas with When I'm 64.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a rock song at all, but it's still catchy as hell song.
And it's a very simple production of it.
Yeah, and it's also very sweet. But then it can go from that to the, you know, very dark with, you know, Day in the Life.
Ooh.
Various parts of Day in the Life get so dark.
Especially at the start, as I mentioned last week, listening to or watching a live performance video of Chris Cornell covering A Day in the Life.
Yeah.
After he had taken his own life.
Yeah. Heartbreaking.
A little bit.
But,
and the interesting thing is too with this album is that each member is represented. It's predominantly a Lennon McCartney album, but Ringo is on here with a couple of songs, and I believe George Harrison has some on here as well.
Yeah, I don't know if, yeah, I don't think Ringo wrote anything, but he definitely was featured prominently as the lead vocalist for With a Little Help from My Friends. But yeah, Harrison with his sort of really bringing in some of the Eastern influences with Within You, Without You.
Yes, after his time with Ravi Shankar in India.
Yeah. And yeah, I don't know what to say about this album that hasn't been said a million times. It's classic. It's sort of revolutionized a lot of studio practices. Like George Martin was a genius on this album.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Was it not this album that made Brian Wilson go crazy?
I think that's the rumor where that he was working on Pet Sounds and was already sort of experimenting with big crazy arrangements and orchestras and stuff with, you know, Good Vibrations. I think was, you know, working on the follow up to Pet Sounds, which was Smile. And I think the rumor goes, or the legend goes, he heard Sgt. Pepper's, basically broke down and said, I can't possibly top this, and then shelved Smile for 50 years or 40 years or whatever it was. And
if you haven't heard why, then certainly this is a good reason to pick up Sergeant Pepper's if you have never heard it before. I don't know how, but it's something that may have escaped or flown under your radar. Hear the album that basically brought world peace for a week in the 60s.
Yeah, you know,
to
much.
A certain extent, brought world peace.
Yeah.
There was just one collective album that everyone was listening to, every station was playing, everyone was talking about, everyone had or had to have, was Sgt. Pepper's.
And I think one of my favorite weird pieces of trivia about this album was that the second it came out, I think on the day it came out, Jimi Hendrix basically said to his band, "We have to play this live before the Beatles do." And they quickly learned it and played it live that night. And apparently Paul McCartney and John Lennon were in the audience and basically went, "You son of a bitch." But then, like, that's one of those just great classic rock stories, apparently. It's just like, huh. And there's, like, video footage of it and everything. Like, it's not perfect, but it's Hendrix playing Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. It's kind of awesome.
Something that is seems so incongruous, but it exists.
Yeah.
Should never happen, but it did. And it's worth it. It is worth your time. If you regard the Beatles as just being something your grandparents or your parents listen to, well, there's a reason for that.
Yeah. Maybe you should include yourself in those ranks of people that listen to the Beatles. There's nothing wrong with listening to old music.
No.
Like, when it stands the test of time and when it's good music, nothing wrong with liking it.
Maybe find out why.
Yeah.
And you can do that with Sgt. Pepper's. Again, 50th anniversary. Think of all the crazy technologies we have and recording methods and approaches we have these days. And listen to what they did 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, Sgt. Pepper's can be done so easily now.
Yeah. But also listen to the stuff that they did before Sgt. Pepper's and then see the market jump in quality and innovation. Then you'll kind of realize, oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. And really, Sgt. Pepper's is that demarcation line in their career.
Yeah.
Like, fully and completely.
Yeah. And I think, with music in general, it really opened the doors for a lot of people to go, hey, maybe I should try something like that.
You know, I can expand beyond just a traditional rock song structure.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be 2.5 minutes about, you know, taking my girl out for a dance or something.
Yeah, I could write a song that's actually 3 songs smushed together that part of it is about the news, part of it is about me having a problem getting up and going to work, and then just, like, going back to talking about the news again for some reason. Like,
made it possible.
Yeah.
I mean, that specific structure you'd be probably sued for.
Yeah.
Or clearly copying A Day in the Life, but hey.
Yeah. But that whole idea, like, Radiohead has, you know, nodded to the Beatles. Lots of people have nodded to the Beatles. The Beatles, come on.
It's true. I mean, the distinctive cover of the album we've seen time and time again. You know, them standing with all the cardboard cutouts of everyone.
Yep.
Which, it's a hell of a fun game to try and figure, you know, point out all the people you know and can recognize.
Yep, and realize that you don't know a lot of people.
No, you're just like, okay, I got 7. There's more than 7 on here.
Yeah, there's like 50 on here, but yeah.
I need a map. So, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, worth your time. But as I said at the start of the segment, we had a movie which was the younger of the two, and it's younger by 15 years, which means it is celebrating its 35th anniversary. It is a movie which came out on June 4th, 1982, and it's a film that kind of reinvigorated interest in a franchise that had previously existed, interest somewhat waned, was brought back in a previous motion picture form with mixed results, but this really was the reinvigoration of the franchise of Star Trek.
Yes, this movie was the second in the classic film franchise series, that being The Wrath of Khan. By many people's accounts, one of the best, probably the best Star Trek movie, though people often will say the even movies are the good ones, the odd ones are a little bit less, and I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 2 and 4, definitely great. The Wrath of Khan, a great, more serious movie. Voyage Home, a great, silly movie.
True.
But The Wrath of Khan, the serious movie, has so many classic scenes in it. Like, you might not consider yourself a Star Trek fan, but there are lines that you've probably said or heard before and never even realized they're from this.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. I mean, the whole film focuses on the dynamic between Ricardo Montalban as Khan Noonien Singh.
Yes.
Who was actually a character in one episode of the original series about 15 years prior.
Yep.
And brought back to be the villain in this one, which was kind of a crazy idea. Because there wasn't really an overarching series of episodes with Ricardo Montalban on the original episode, or original series, rather.
No, it was really just the one episode. I think it was called Space Seed.
And where could have easily just been ignored and lost to time and history, but this one, they made him the focus because he was...
Well, he was such a great bad guy in that episode.
He was.
Like, and when you think of, like, all of the, you know, the various, like, other characters or, like, you know, the one-off people that they would encounter on the original series, I think that he was one of the most memorable, just for various reasons, just, like, his charisma, his... everything, all the energy he brought to the role was so perfect.
And also such a perfect foil for Shatner as Captain Kirk, who himself was just, you know, charismatic on screen. And to have the two of them go at it, they worked perfectly off each other.
Yeah.
But, of course, this one, Khan has been, you know, cast out to remote planets, SETI Alpha 5, and then ultimately SETI Alpha 6. And then hell-bent on getting his revenge on Kirk.
Yes.
Absolutely hell-bent on getting his revenge on Kirk. And is eventually able to?
Yeah. Eventually. And then, you know, things happen. But, yeah.
And then ultimately Kirk lets out his memorable and well-parodied cry of Khan.
Yep. Just him yelling it. It's zooming out to the whole planet, then you hear the echo of him saying it, and it's a classic scene, but many other classic scenes in this movie as well. I think it was the first time the first instance of the phrase "revenge is a dish best served cold" that I can recall seeing.
Indeed.
You know, and yeah, the classic scene with Kirk and Spock near the end.
Ah, yes, yes.
Of course, I'm not going to spoil anything, though I'd be well within my rights. It's 35 years old. Come on. If you haven't seen it, what the hell's wrong with you?
That's true. Well, also, too, Star Trek Into Darkness, the second of the new Trek movies.
Yes, they basically parodied the scene, or did an homage to the scene, I should say.
Well, the whole film seems an homage to the second Star Trek movie.
Yeah, though everything was just skewed a little bit off to the side, or flipped entirely on its head. I still think The Wrath of Khan was way better. Just personal opinion.
They did it first.
Yeah, they did it first. It was just the original cast. It wasn't people who sort of looked like the original cast. It was the original cast. And, yeah, it's got heart. It's got, you know, all the emotional scenes. It's got a lot of the classic badass scenes. And,
some uncomfortable scenes with those earworms. Brutal. Yeah,
brutal. Feel really bad for Chekhov. He's had to go through a lot of the whole film franchise.
Gets crapped on quite a bit.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Well worth your time to watch if you haven't already. If, you know, you've got a rainy Sunday afternoon, this is worth putting on. Or even if you're, you know, still looking to get excited about the new Star Trek Discovery series that I believe is coming on to screens later this fall, though its production seems to be having its fair bit of issues and troubles.
Yes.
But nevertheless, granted, and ultimately, do you really need a reason to watch Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan? No, you don't. You can just put it on regardless.
Yeah. It's one of those movies where you just, it's a reasonless movie.
Exactly.
You just know it's a good movie. You don't want to have your time wasted by something that might not be good, but you want to fill time with a movie. The Wrath of Khan is a good, solid choice.
Really is. And, aged better than some other movies. Certainly has aged better than the first Star Trek movie.
Yeah. It doesn't have uncomfortably long scenes just for no reason going in, just showing you an entire spaceship for some reason, or just weird almost B-roll of outer space for no reason that goes on for way too long.
Yeah, and the reason I made the point, or tried to make the point, that this kind of reinvigorated the film franchise is because the first one kind of wasn't that successful. It was neat that it was brought to movie screens and whatnot, but this, a lot of people believe that because Gene Roddenberry was taken off of this project, that's kind of what saved it and allowed the writers and directors to go in kind of their own direction instead of having Gene Roddenberry just kind of be a micromanager and have to have the whole thing under his command. Still, ultimately, he's the creator and father of Star Trek, and he will forever get his respect and due for that, but he also did the first Star Trek movie. That was not good.
No, it really wasn't.
At least 45 minutes too long.
At least.
Like, if not an hour too long.
Yeah, they're like, if someone were to re-edit it with all of the extraneous scenes taken out, it would have been pretty good. Pretty enjoyable.
Because
there were, enough good scenes in the movie. But, yeah. Wrath of Khan definitely tightened it up quite a bit.
And it just feels more familiar and somewhat similar to the original series.
Yeah, and it sort of set the rest of the film series up from a better state. And they all kind of kept that intensity up, like throughout.
Yes. And that familiarity, just that, that feel that this film had that maybe the first one was lacking. So, this is a better use of your time than the first Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
By far. So certainly check it out to commemorate its 35th anniversary. And while you're driving out and about and around, perhaps to pick up a copy of this on Blu-ray, you can be listening to The Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, if you weren't aware, has turned 50 years old this week. Good God. that is old, but what can we say? Time marches on, and it has marched on quite a bit here as we are drawing to the end of this week's program. We certainly hope you enjoyed it. We enjoyed bringing it to you and hope that you can join us once again next week as we will be doing our last show before the start of E3 and that whole madness kicks off.
Yes.
That
schlamazel that happens every year.
Yes, that big newsworthy event where things will always be announced and come out of, regardless of the leaks that there are heading into it and the, spoiled surprises and whatnot, but there will always be more. But we will certainly be speaking of that in 2 weeks. And next week, we'll just kind of collect our breaths beforehand and cover what needs to be covered before E3 dominates everything. If you're going to E3, let us know. We're just curious to know if anyone managed to get some of the limited tickets that were made available to the public. You can email us info@thearcadeshow.com. You can also send us a message on Twitter @TheArcadeShow and follow us and like our page on Facebook and send us a message that way as well, facebook.com/TheArcadeShow. And hell, while you're at our website of TheArcadeShow.com, you can also just click and subscribe to us and follow the links to subscribe to us on both iTunes and our section of the Google Play Podcast Store section, front, service, medium, thing, that thing.
Yes.
We're on both. Leave us a review, a rating, if you can, and just subscribe and, all that good jazz. But we'll be back with you once again next week. So until then, everybody, good night.
Good night.